Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Martellaro. And this week, my guest is former Apple Senior Director and currently writer in residence at iMore, Michael Gartenberg. Michael, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
You are a regular because it's so much fun to have you on your show and we geek out and have so much fun. So I thought what we do this time is talk about WWDC predictions. It's only about a month away. And I thought we'd just chat about what we're thinking. I know there's a tendency to fall into the hardware trap, but my feeling is that we're so hungry for hardware as it is that it's really hard to resist talking about hardware. But we'll talk about software too and developer aspects of WWDC. But I thought we'd start off with big question. Do you have anything in mind that you think is the big thing? We recently learned that the big iOS macOS code merger is probably a 2019 thing now from Gruber, Birdie on his shoulder. So that isn't going to happen, but there might be some groundwork and some framework being laid. But have you been thinking about maybe some big thing that's on your mind?
Yeah, so, you know, it's always Gruber versus Gurman, if you will. And sometimes I think little birdies land on Gruber's shoulder to, let him say things that Gurman can't or won't. So it's always a little like, duck, duck, goose. Let's see who's got the person last and then go, yay.
What we're talking about here is this so-called Project Marzipan that Mark Gurman talked about in December, where Apple's going to devise a fix to the architecture of Xcode and the macOS and the iOS API so that you can write once and then target your app for the macOS environment or the iOS environment. The advantage being the developers only have to have one code base, and they can easily bring their glorious iOS apps over to the Mac. This is not a merger of the two operating systems. It's just more of a conformity of the API environment, right?
Right. Think of this as more of, let's go into the other world, Chromebooks, where Chromebooks now can run Android apps, and they can run them in Windows and run multiple of them. Mm-hmm. This would probably be something similar, at least as close as you can get, because it increases the value of one thing. It doesn't decrease the value of the other thing. Is it going to happen at WWDC? Probably not. It's a little too early for that. Are there plans like this going on? Yeah, almost certainly. But, the number of things, and I guess this is important for listeners to understand, the number of things that Apple might plan for given WWDC or for any other event that suddenly get cut at the last moment because they're just not ready. That's part of the nature of the secrecy of Apple products. We can introduce whatever we want to introduce, and there's no timeline guiding us because we never said what the timeline was. So,
yeah, but what about, I've got to jump in here. What about the apparent premature announcement of the HomePod at WWDC 2017 and then promised to ship in December and ending up shipping in January or February? And then what about AirPower that was announced so long ago and didn't happen? It's going to, but it hasn't happened yet. Is Apple falling into some sort of premature announcement mode here? Or what's going on, do you think?
Yeah. The answer is yes.
Yes.
Look, back in my day, things were kept totally close to vest because you can't miss a target that you haven't, said, hey, I'm hitting this target.
Right.
And recently it's become this thing of this, I guess, we need to announce things or talk about things before they're ready because we can't let the market you know, jumpstart us. So yeah, we've seen this, right, with, you know, the home power devices, home pod, you know, any number of times where Apple has now said, we're going to do something. Let's talk about, you know, the AirPlay 2 stuff for HomePod that still hasn't come to market.
Went into beta, then out of beta.
Yeah, I mean, this is a little unusual. This is, well, it's definitely different from the Apple that I worked at, in the sense of don't talk about things until they're ready to go.
I think Apple's feeling the heat of competition, maybe from an company called maybe Amazon.
I definitely think so. And, you know, there's been a lot of backstories about people in terms of the HomePod project, who what they worked on, and was speaker or smart speaker. And it definitely feels like this was a product that was, I don't want to say rushed to market, but brought to market in a different way than it probably was originally thought of. Because all of a sudden, Amazon was getting all of this mind share with Echo and Alexa. And, you know, Apple was clearly perceived as being behind the curve here. The problem is they are behind the curve. You know,
well, there were two things. One of the things is that Apple stuck to its vision steadfastly in a stubborn kind of way, which Apple tends to do. Like, you know, we won't drag around in the mud with Amazon. We have this high level, you know, great sounding device. And the other is that there's been some criticism that Siri wasn't able to tackle the kinds of tasks that Alexa could. And so Apple kind of just had kept its sort of head in the sand and just charged forward and then suffered the consequence. Do you think there'll be a major revision of HomePod at WWDC maybe?
Well, I think there's a lot of retcon there about Apple. Like, we're going to, you know, focus on audio quality because that's what we think is most important. You know, someone once said, when all you have is a hammer, the whole world looks like a nail.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple, you know, has audio quality, and they were focusing on this. And clearly, we're not focusing on this aspect of smart speaker and things. I think most people will argue that Siri, relative to what Amazon can do in terms of their speaker and intelligence, is that Apple's behind. Apple's behind Amazon, behind Google.
And but, Amazon keeps pouring it on. Like, they just came out with Dot for kids. It seems like every week there's pouring on the coals, you know, to increase the advantage even further.
Well, and the big thing that I think Amazon did, you know, that Apple hasn't done, was Amazon opened up the whole Echo / Alexa platform to developers. Developers can do anything they want to create new skills for Alexa. So I can say, you know, Alexa, tell me, what time does the Sabbath start in Teaneck, New Jersey on Friday? And it'll give me an answer. And Siri, not so much. That's because developers have, you know, embraced this. And Apple has sort of opened up Siri, but not to the extent that Amazon has. So we're kind of entering into this next new world. Look, one of the things that Apple still has, you know, going for itself is the fact that, you know, Siri is tied into iOS. iOS is tied into iPhones. So I can pick up my iPhone and say, hey, Siri, do the following for me. And it'll try to do it. If I say, you know, hey, Alexa, do the following for me, it has no idea because it can't hear me at all. So the home court advantage, as long as there's still a lot of iPhones, still works for Apple's, you know, favor. But as you're getting into this whole notion of what is next, what is beyond the phone, beyond this notion of smart speakers, then Apple doesn't look so good, at least at the moment. And the thing to remember is, sure, I can put my, you know, Amazon Echo next to my HomePod, and wow, yeah, there's going to be, if I'm listening to two of them together, there's a real difference.
Sounds like a Stephen Wright joke. Let him fight it out.
Yeah. kids, ask your parents about that. You can hear the difference. But for most people, it's like, this thing is going to be sitting in my kitchen. I'm just listening to a tune. I don't really care about the super audio fidelity. And I think that's where Apple is kind of going to have to need to think some of these things going forward, because it isn't going to be about audio fidelity as much as Apple is trying to push it that way, particularly when I can get an Echo Dot for like $49 that'll do most of the stuff that I want to do. And remember that, you know, we're talking about two different business models. Every time, you know, Jeff Bezos sells me one of these devices, it's the gift that keeps on giving himself. I'm buying more stuff from Amazon, tied into the Amazon ecosystem. And from an Apple perspective, this is something they need to rethink, and especially the high cost of HomePod. The other thing that I thought was interesting, and, you know, again, you know, it's hard to say, like, you know, because they didn't say something, does that mean they said something? Tim didn't talk about HomePod at all on earnings yesterday. Like,
no sales numbers, nothing.
Didn't hear the word. It wasn't like, and so I think the Apple apologists would say, like, well, hey, it doesn't prove anything. And my response is, having used to prepare Tim for these things, is if there was something to say, boy, they would have said it.
They eke out the most positive thing from anything. And there wasn't anything to eke out there.
Nothing. I mean, there was no, like, there wasn't even any spin. Like, no. There was nothing.
Non-spinnable. Well, do you think the limitations of Siri right now are historical in technical development, or is it all based on the focus on privacy? We don't need to know that much about you, and so Siri wasn't designed to handle some kinds of tasks.
Well, again, from an Apple perspective, it would be, you know, hey, it's all about privacy, and because we've taken, you know, care of all these things. From the marketplace, it's Siri's just fall behind. There was a piece a couple of weeks ago by one of the, you know, Siri designers, one of the original people on the team, that talked about how Apple had this thing. Siri was originally an app that came out of some think tank, and it was pretty amazing. And Apple bought it. I think a lot of people, I think including myself at the time, said, wow, Apple should really just buy this thing. They did. Siri was the wave of the future. And then they just kind of sat on it. Siri has just not got, you know, a whole lot smarter. So is it a question of concerns over privacy? I don't know. But
if you're going to have that privacy element to it, then you've got to tout it some way, spin it and say, well, look, you know, here's the downside of buying an Echo, and here's our vision of how it should work. And it works this way because of our focus on privacy. And these are the benefits, and, you know, tout. But Apple doesn't seem to be doing that. They seem to be sort of keeping it low key and focusing on the sound quality side of it. Even though Tim Cook during the earnings report yesterday made an interesting statement about how Apple believes that privacy is a fundamental human right. Still, they've got to figure out a way to sell their privacy better if that's the element of Siri, or make Siri kick butt.
John, you should be working for Phil. And like, that's that spin was like absolutely perfect. It's the type of stuff that I used to write, but not as good. Yeah, take it one way or the other. But at the end of the day, this is the stuff that people are looking at, consumers are looking at. And it's okay when the thing is the, you know, the AI or however we want to call it is built into the device, right? I buy an iPhone, I get Siri, done. But the idea of spending a couple hundred dollars to buy a smart speaker that can only do X, Y, and Z, it still feels like, yeah, that's questionable. So it comes down to the question is, can Apple sell, you know, audio fidelity as the driver behind these things? Or are places like Amazon going to say, hey, it's good enough, or sound is good enough. You're not putting this thing in your living room or your media room as your, you know, ultimate music device. It's going to go in your kitchen. It's going to go in your bedroom, and it can do all these other things. And by the way, you're already part of our ecosystem. So we'll have to see how this plays out going forward. And, you know, there is a home court advantage. If you're, you know, on iOS, it's Siri. If you're on an Android phone, it's Hey Google. Those are the things that are going to work out of the box, and the other stuff won't. The question is, when you get to these other smart devices like these speakers and all of these other things, you know, who's going to win? And the question I have with HomePod is that it works great if you're tied into the Apple ecosystem. If I'm an Apple Music sure. subscriber, this is the device I want. I don't want anything else, and I'm probably willing to deal with, you know, Siri's limitations. But if I'm one of the, you know, millions of Spotify users, well, this is not the device for me. So the question I think is we're going to see is, will Apple open up this, you know, HomePod in sense of arguing, let's sell more devices and let Spotify users get the same thing? Or are we going to continue drive, you know, people towards
Apple? I have a sense that that's probably going to happen. I think there's going to be some coming to Jesus moment during WWDC when Tim Cook comes out and says, we have really fixed up the HomePod. It's got AirPlay 2. It's got support for these music systems. You can do a whole lot more now with Siri. I just kind of can see that rolling out in my mind.
Anyway. I hear all of those things except for supporting other music services.
Apple would be a big challenge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you think about it. Look at the earnings results. Apple is focusing more on services, driving services revenue. I would love to see Apple open up HomePod and say, yeah, you can now set a default like Spotify. But it's not going to happen. I mean, the interesting thing is...
Well, if it doesn't happen, then they got to do something else, like maybe come out with a $199 little brother.
Yeah, but then you lose the whole, you know, audio fidelity thing. Like, this is the most audio, you know...
Yeah, but that's a tried and true technique, you know, 90% of the capability for half the price. It's a standard marketing thing.
Amazon Dot, right? Except we've never seen Apple go in that direction. Apple's never tried to play, we're going to be cheaper. So...
We got to move on.
Let's move along. I think we'll see what we're going to see.
Tell you what, let's do a commercial first. And then let's come back in the second half and we'll talk about some of the things at WWDC. How's that?
Let's do it.
All right, folks, we'll be back in 60 seconds. Stay with us. Got a short commercial break.
Hello there, all you fabulous background mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage where we have a section called Support TMO, or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
And we're back. Thank you. I'm talking with Michael Gartenberg. So let's tick off some items, kind of like, you know, hit them one by one real quickly here and talk about what we might see at WWDC. Do you think there'll be an iPad Pro with Face ID? And do you think Face ID is coming across the line? Maybe next too?
Yeah, I think the answer is yes. And these things will be ready when they're ready. The one thing that Apple does is not release products until they're, you know, ready. You know, don't waste things ahead of their time. So if there is a product like that that's ready to go, sure, WWDC is a perfect place to do it. If not, then it'll be pushed off. And that's the whole nature of the way Apple does products. I mean, there were any number of times that I can recall when things should have been announced, for example, at WWDC, and then were scrapped. They just weren't quite there. So,
well, do you think because of that and the disaster with HomePod and AirPower that maybe Apple will just keep mum on the new Mac Pro, not say anything at all?
I would think that at this point, there's kind of like two schools. One is, let's not say anything until we're good. And the other that says, let's say something and hope that we'll be good, that we can ship. But, you know, the argument always goes back from an Apple perspective is, look, this is WWDC. This is a developer conference. This is not an end user conference. This is not a product announcement session. You know, this is stuff that is out there for developers. And, you know, if we can sneak some other stuff in, good.
Well, historically, Apple has rolled out really cool hardware to get the developers excited about the business prospects of writing for Apple hardware.
Right. And again, if it's ready, great. If it's not ready, then don't. Although, as you've pointed out, we've seen a couple of, you know, cases in recent history where Apple has said, we're going to announce stuff and then not deliver. I would, again, knowing the people behind this and the discussions that go, you know, in the background, I think at this point it would be, let's not say something until we're really sure that we're ready to say something. But at the other hand, we want to keep people excited. So that'll be the balance between the two. So there's plenty of stuff to talk about from, you know, an OS perspective, you know, the next iteration of iOS, what that's going to look like, next iteration of macOS, although I don't think anyone's overly excited about any iteation of macOS at this point. You know, Apple's going to have
to give us stability and security, please, please.
Yeah, all right. Stability, security, privacy. Apple's going to have to show off an awful lot of, you know, amazing things. You know, show me a touchscreen, you know, MacBook that has new all sorts of, you know,
a toaster fridge.
Features. Yeah, exactly. No, we don't do toaster fridges, right? So it'll be, you know, new macOS, whatever that's worth, new iOS, for whatever that's worth, new hardware. Well, it's not the right time for, you know, certainly new phones. It's probably not the right time. Right? Yeah, even for new iPads, because that would have made more sense for the education event that just went on.
Yeah, an iPad with Face ID doesn't seem like a big WWDC announcement. But yeah, maybe MacBook Pros, though, because there's been that vacuum, you know, that terrible Mac vacuum from 2014 to 16. And then Apple got religion with Mac again and announced the iMac Pro and the Mac Pro. So do you think that in order to keep the fuel going on the fire of the Mac, that Apple has to do something to punctuate its renewed commitment to the Mac, because we've got the iMac Pro. We're hungry to hear Apple sort of, you know, say, you know, we're still on the Mac bandwagon and here's what we got for you now. And that would really come over big.
I mean, this would be the right time for a Mac Pro update. When was it? 2013 that, you know, Phil Schiller got up and said, can't innovate my ass.
Right. Well, right. Hey, but then it didn't ship until December.
Right. Well, they shipped one, you know, so they made the end of the year. But yeah. So it's 2013 versus 2018. It would not be a bad moment for Apple to say, you know, this is our professional audience. These are developers. These are people who, you know, fast will never be fast enough. And then the question is, can they introduce something and then ship something? The last thing Apple needs to do right now is to introduce something at WWDC and say it's coming before the end of the year. And then, you know, December 31st, they ship five.
Well, it could be the architecture of the Mac Pro has to be discussed, because I have this sneaking feeling that the Mac Pro is going to be some sort of hybrid machine with parallel processing capability, you know, up the whatever, and developers are going to be able to exploit this machine and develop tools for it and further leverage off of OpenCL, further leverage off of parallel processing and maybe ARM processors as a sort of, you know, multi-unit sort of small cluster embedded in the computer. That there could be months and months worth of preparatory work for that. And maybe now is time to get the developers on the bandwagon to develop those engineering and scientific apps. Just a thought.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
Well, remember that these high-end machines are high-end machines. They're sold for high-end audiences. They're the type of things that Apple wants to say, hey, we're serious about these markets. But they don't sell a whole lot of them. Even if you look at something like the iMac Pro, not a whole lot of those are being sold at those price points. The people that want them will buy them. But they're not designed for you or for me or for my mother or even my kids. So those are things you do for bragging rights. The question is, can you rev things that are interesting enough that people are going to want to buy and say, wow, the stuff that I have isn't good enough. I want this new thing. But at the same point, make them, you know, price point attractive enough that are there going forward. MacBook was a great example. MacBook, the, you know, slim little thin guy, as opposed to the, you know, guy that was introduced back in the late 90s, was a great example. Here's how we can create desirability. Wasn't the fastest machine. It wasn't, you know, the highest performance machine, but wow, look at this. Apple took, you know, essentially a 12-inch display and put it in an 11-inch form factor with this incredible new keybook that was just like amazing.
I have one. I have one. And you're right about the desirability factor, the size, the weight. It, you know, it's fast enough to run Mac OS. It's fast enough to do your email and your browsing. It's incredibly slender. And I wish I had a slightly bigger screen, though. I went from a 13-inch MacBook Air to a 12-inch MacBook, and I felt a little bit of cramping in the display area. But it, in and, space gray, it's an awesome machine.
Yeah, and I went from an 11-inch to this, and to me it was like, wow, this is just magic in terms of price, performance, in terms of this amazing new keyboard.
Yeah, I love that keyboard.
You know, in terms of this,
I'm the only one, by the way. Maybe you and me are the only ones who love the keyboard. Well,
I thought it was like, well, you know what? You have to make certain trade-offs, and this was a pretty good one and an amazing one. But even like the trackpad, like, okay, I remember the first time someone showed it to me, and they're going to click on this, and I'm like, okay, cool. And like, you didn't really click on anything, and I'm like, yes, I did. No, you didn't. Yes, I did.
Haptic feedback and tricked you.
Yeah, the ability for us to think that we were clicking on something when we actually weren't clicking on something. And the amount of innovation and design that had to, you know, create to do that was just amazing. So that's one way you can sell new set of devices. Faster feeds, faster speeds, faster, you know.
Do you think the MacBook needs more USB-C ports? Mine has one, and I always felt like if it, you know, if that port failed, I'd be dead in the water. And I'd really like to see one on each side on the in a 12-inch MacBook, 13-inch MacBook, two USB-C ports.
Yeah, I think that it was fine. Great. For when it first came out, I think it was fine. For now, not so much. And again, it's one of these things where the MacBook design was so far ahead, so innovative, but everyone else in the industry is caught up with it in one way or another. So the question is it just about feeds and speeds? Yeah, for a certain segment of the market. Look, if you're trying to, you know, do the next, you know, Toy Story 4 and you're trying to render it in real time, fast will never be fast enough. If you're trying to, like, you know, re-engineer the human genome, fast will never be fast enough. But I'm going to guess for folks like you and me, and we might even be towards the right end of the bell curve, fast is fast enough. So there has to be some other things going forward. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what Mac OS looks like, what iOS looks like going forward. And can Apple make us care enough about these things to want to go ahead and either upgrade, to go ahead and buy the next, you know, great device. And, you know, iPhone X was a great example of that. It took iPhone 8 and it was sort of the iteration of iPhone 7. And I was like, okay, fine. Like, it wasn't anything to be excited about. You looked at iPhone 10, it was like, whoa, look at all this stuff. That like changed everything and showed us all sorts of incredible new ways that we would want one of these devices at that price point. And that's always going to be the challenge for Apple going forward. AirPods. Wow. You know, wireless Bluetooth headphones. Seriously, who cares? AirPods. Whoa. At least in the stuff that I've been using, the stuff that I've been testing, no one's even come close to doing what Apple has done with this in this fairly simple thing. But getting to, you know, earpods, you know, AirPods, whatever they are, talking to each other via Bluetooth simultaneously without breaking down the connection and going things up. That's the stuff that Apple does best.
I love my iPhone 10, and I predict that the iPhone 10 will get a little bigger in its display, and it's going to further negate any growth in iPads, and it's going to kill the iPad mini for sure. Let me ask you something else. Recently, Apple announced, although we kind of had an inkling back in November when Apple disbanded the airport team, but Apple finally made it formal that they were disbanding the Airport Extreme, Airport Express, and the Time Capsule. And uniformly, 100% of my readers and listeners told me that this was a bad idea because we trust Apple with our communications infrastructure. In this internet environment with all the bad stuff going on, the most important thing to us is our communications. And in light of that, our most important aspect is the security and integrity of our communications hardware. And that's what people were telling me. That's what listeners and readers were telling me. And they were upset that Apple disbanded the airport base station because Apple should have that key infrastructure as a part of our lives, is a core technology for Apple. That's what listeners told me and readers told me. What do you think?
Yeah, it's kind of sad to see Apple go away from this. Go back to the original, the Flying Saucer airport that Apple introduced way back when.
Yeah.
And if you rip that thing apart, it was actually a Lucent, you know, PSMCIA card that was stuck in there with Apple magic on top of it. But Apple really brought the idea of wireless networking to the home and made it, you know, easy and usable all the way up. I know I still use one here. On one hand, I wonder at the sense of, does Apple still need to do this? The idea of wireless networking at the time when wireless networking was, God, who could figure this stuff out? TCP/IP and 802.11 and DNS addresses and all the other stuff. I mean, my God, you had to be like an IT professional to get this stuff working at home. And Apple said, here's this cool thing called, you know, Airport. Plunk it down. It'll just work. And that was part of the whole Apple ecosystem. It just works. And we're going to provide this.
Especially with IPv6. The airport base stations were one of the few that were certified by Comcast.
Absolutely. And we're going to provide this critical piece of your infrastructure because you know you're going to want it, even though you don't think you do, but you will. And we're going to give you all sorts of, you know, ways to back up your stuff over the network. And it comes down to, I guess, in my mind, a couple of things. One, does Apple feel that there's no more value they can add here? Other places can deliver
value is in the support of the company's vision of your security and your privacy. You go to Best Buy now and you buy a router home base station, Wi-Fi base station, and it's got a chip that came from China or who knows where, and it was a OEM part that they bought for $6.40 and slapped it in there and didn't do any testing. And, you know, delivered it to you for $35 and you go, oh, well, that's a big deal. And then you wonder, you know, are there back doors? How did the firmware get written? How is it updated? Who's tested it? And Apple puts its stamp of approval on a product that it brands and sells, you trust it.
There's no money to be made, though, on airports and airport-like devices.
Maybe the money to be made is in Apple's commitment and vision to us and our trust in the company.
I think the original idea was Apple's commitment to, we're going to make this stuff work. You want to get on the internet, we're going to make it really easy
there
for
is no
you
step
and
three.
Your family. Right, exactly.
Jeff Goldblum.
Exactly. There is no step three. And it worked. And the airport administration tools are still like, I can't imagine using anything else because it's just stuff that just works. But Apple's saying, hey, you know what? We don't need to be part of this ecosystem anymore because there's no money in it for us. And there's enough stuff that's for our customers good enough. And in some way, that makes me a little bit sad, only in the sense of Apple saying, we're not necessarily going to have to deliver our customers the best experience or the supreme experience. We're going to let that go to other people because good enough is good enough and there's no money in it for us. So I'm kind of sad to see Apple pull away from this market, even if it was a loss leader, for no other reason that I, as a consumer, could walk into an Apple store and say, okay, I want to buy this, 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 and this. Mm-hmm. And I know it's all going to work together. And you know why I know? Because it's all coming from you. And if it doesn't work, you're going to help me fix it. and you're going to make it work. And at this point, Apple's pulling themselves out of this critical piece of infrastructure, where granted, there's no money to be made. But at the same point, I wonder how many people, myself included, that, you know, spend my money and buy Apple stuff. And maybe it's not arguably the best stuff in the market relative to what's going on today in those devices. But I still buy mine because I know it's part of my Apple ecosystem. I'm tied into the Apple ecosystem. Yeah. And I know if
and
it doesn't
it's going to work with a Mac. I've heard about some routers that are, you know, standard routers, TCP IP, all the good stuff, all the nomenclature, all the buzzwords, and just don't work very well with Macs.
And it's just going to work. It's going to work with my Mac. It's going to work with my iPad. It's going to work with my Chromebook. It's just going to work. And that mantra that Apple has managed to create over the decades, it's just going to work. You're just going to plug it in. You don't really need to know how to do anything, or at the very minimal little bit of stuff. And the truth is, and if it doesn't work, just call us or take it to your local Apple store, and we're going to make it work for you because it has an Apple logo on it. Right. So I'm disappointed to see Apple say, yeah, we bring up the Excel spreadsheets, the cost and benefit and dollar, they just don't work for us anymore.
Well, it could have been administrative too. It could have been the product manager didn't have the vision to carry the product forward. Could be some critical people left the team. Could be Apple couldn't find the expertise. Maybe they felt like the mesh technology had moved beyond and they didn't need to hire a whole new group. So there could have been some technical or procedural or administrative reasons. Hey, we got time for one more topic for WWDC. What do you want to chat about? Pick one.
Hey, OS, iOS, what do you think?
iOS 12. What do we need in iOS 12 besides better Siri? We need to be able to rearrange our home screen without so much trouble. After 11 versions of macOS, this business of way the home pages work and the way the matrix is locked in has been a source of irritation for people. Lack of multi-user support has been an irritation since it's basically a Unix operating system. If they're going to go anywhere with education and some other areas, they've got to have multiple user logon. They probably want to default to 8-digit passcode instead of 6. What else?
Well, I'm thinking 7. Going back to my days as a psychology student, 7 apparently is the easiest number that people can remember, or the maximum number of digits that most people can remember. And that's why phone numbers, by the way, are 7 digits.
Oh, yeah. Bell Telephone put a lot of research into that.
tons of stuff. Yeah. There's a reason that phone numbers were 7 digits, not 8. So, yeah, I think we'll make 7 the default, without a doubt. In terms of multi-user, yeah. This is something that just needs to happen, if for nothing else, for education. You know, as much as Apple keeps pushing into education, you kind of need to have better multi-user accounts, and you need it for families and all of that other stuff that goes into place. In terms of reimagining the UI, absolutely. I think we've gone way beyond what was introduced in 2007. I can't. 10. Figure out. Well, 2007 when the iPhone was first introduced.
Yeah, iPad inherited that awful way to manage our icons. Yeah.
It worked fine when there was only one screen or two screens. I can't manage mine. I try as desperately as I can and coordinate things and come up with all sorts of weird ways to.
Well, you used to be able to do it in iTunes, but that's gone.
And the idea of flipping things around. So I kind of have this like precarious way where things are semi-organized, but it's not even remotely what I would like.
Yeah, and A12 has got the horsepower to do anything they want to do with the UI. Right.
I mean, there has to be a better way of doing this. Clearly, someone at Apple must know a better way of doing this. Yeah. So we can arrange our icons and usability. So it would be cool if we see a big upgrade in terms of iOS, not in terms of like, you know, Chrome and tail fins and, you know, superficial stuff, but a real going back to saying, here's how you manage your iOS device, whether it's a phone or a tablet or whatever, in 2018. And we're going to reimagine that. I'm not betting heavily on that, though. Just don't feel like that's going to happen. We know that certain classes of applications on macOS are gone by the wayside. Apple's kind of given us the hint going forward that if you're using, 32-bit apps, those are not going to be supported going forward. Right. And, you know, pushing developers to upgrade that a little bit. But yeah, it would be nice to see some significant updates to iOS that kind of take it to the next level, to watchOS that take it to the next level.
Please, Apple, give me a watch face besides the activity that has hours, minutes, and seconds. I could buy a $14 Seiko digital watch at Walmart and has hours, minutes, seconds, but my Apple Watch doesn't allow me to do that. Only on one display that I'm forced into. Hours, minutes, and seconds. Please.
Yeah. Or I can buy a $49, Amazfit smartwatch and get like 10,000 watch faces because Apple feels like watch faces are just something that it owns and that other people don't. I would expect to see that at the very minimum for watchOS. But the
think we'll see that EKG thing roll out?
I think we will.
What about blood glucose from perspiration and a watch band? You think
too
that's
soon.
Too far away? All right. Well, on that note, we're going to have to wrap it up.
So we'll see what happens at WWDC. I think it is going to be a big event. And I do think we're going to see some surprises that you and I have not talked about.
Oh, yeah. We were out of time. And there are lots of things we could have covered, like Apple's video productions, original content, movies, and stuff like that. I think we'll see some blurbs about that. About state of the art, state of the progress, and what's happening, and timeline maybe for rollout, and some other stuff in watchOS. But regrettably, we've used up all the time we have. So I want to thank you for being on the show again and chatting with me. It's always nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me. Look forward to being back soon.
And you will be back soon because you are a regular. You just kind of light things up with your perspectives and your experience with Apple. So it's always great to hear from you, Michael. Thanks. So, folks, you've been listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. We'll see you again next week.